I want you to step in a time machine with me and travel back to the year 701 BC. And imagine yourself as a small child in the city of Jerusalem. And you're playing with your friends and you're playing around the walls and you look out to the east and to the north. You see a great cloud of dust on the horizon. And you go running to your father. You say, "Abba, what's that dust cloud out there? What's happening?" And your dad says, "My child, that is Assyria." You say, "But who's Assyria? And what are they doing?" And he sits down and he tells you a story. He says, "Remember our great king, the King David?" And you say, "Yeah, I remember David. And his son Solomon, the one who was so wise." "Yes, I remember that, Father." And then he says, "You remember when Solomon was king, that after he was king, that our nation split in two? That we split into two countries, 10 tribes to the north, and we here in the south, the 2 tribes became Judah. And then you remember wars and the conflict that went on between us." You say, "Yes, Father." "And you remember how God said that we were to be a light to the nations, that we were to trust in Him, and when we put our trust in Him and lived out, that we would shine and be a witness to the power of the Lord to all the nations. But we've failed to live up to that. In the northern kingdom, those 10 tribes, they didn't live up. And 20 years ago, the kingdom of Assyria came and conquered Samaria and took them off into captivity. You look and you say, Abba, are they coming for us now?" And your dad says, "Yes, my son, I've been down and I've been sitting at the city gates with the elders. And they've told us that Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, is on the march with his army. And he is coming here to Jerusalem. You see, Hezekiah, who is our king, his father Ahaz made a treaty with Assyria long ago. And he made it a pledge to Assyria. We haven't lived up to that. And Hezekiah is doubting that he should be pledged to Assyria because Assyria is calling on us to worship their gods. And Hezekiah has refused to do that. He wants to be faithful to the Lord our God. And so now Assyria is marching on us to come." And you look and you say, "Abba, what's going to happen?" And your father says, "I don't know, my son." And so that's where we find ourselves. At the start of chapter 36 of the book of Isaiah. Now, the book of Isaiah is this incredible story of prophecy where the prophet Isaiah is speaking. And one of the central themes that Isaiah has spoken to his people is the theme of trust. What they are going to do, whom they are going to trust. And so we come kind of, the book of Isaiah is divided into almost 2 halves, chapters 1 through 39, and then the second half, 40 through 66. And so this story that takes place in chapter 36 and really goes through 37 and 38, kind of concludes that section. It is a narrative story of that. And so we find in the 14th year of King Hezekiah's reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked all the fortified cities of Judah and captured them. Then the king of Assyria sent his field commander with a large army to King Hezekiah at Jerusalem. So this army of Assyria has marched, one of the greatest armies the world has ever known. The terror of all the nations, coming from the north and from the east, coming down, sweeping through Judah, and now standing before Jerusalem. We have to have an idea of what this is like. We're talking about Judah, 2 little tribes of Israel, taking on the empire of Assyria. This is something like the Dominican Republic taking on the United States. This tiny little nation challenging their might and their power, because Hezekiah isn't sure what to do. In those days, there were alliances made and alliances broken, and he's looking to see what he can do. And he's decided he no longer wants to live under the thumb of Assyria. And so he's gathered some of the other city-states, and he's gathered Egypt, and he says, "Let's rebel, let's revolt against Assyria." And so they start a rebellion, they start a revolt against Assyria. Now, if you're Sennacherib, king of Assyria, you have a bunch of little countries who revolt, who start to take away your taxes and all the goods and services you've been sending them, Do you simply sit on your throne and say, oh, that's okay, we don't need them anymore? No. You marshal your armies and you march off to crush the rebellion. And so they sent off. And so now we find the commander of the king's army standing at the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to the launderer's field. And you might say, well, why is it so significant? Where is he standing? And we read these stories in Scripture, and there's not a lot of details given, but we're told, here's this place where the commander of the king's army, because if you go back to Isaiah chapter 7, you find that 35 years earlier, Isaiah stood in that very same place and spoke to Ahaz, Hezekiah's father, and said, don't put your trust in Assyria. And now the Assyrian stands in that very same place saying, put your trust in me. And so he comes and he stands and he's basically giving a speech because the Assyrians, they want to conquer Jerusalem, but it's a whole lot easier if Jerusalem just kind of throws their hands up in the air and waves the white flag. Because besieging a city, building walls, hauling those things is a lot of work. And so he tries a little psychological warfare here. He says, this is what the great king of Assyria says. On what are you basing this confidence of yours? You say you have counsel and might for war, but you speak only empty words. On whom are you depending that you rebel against me? And so that's the question. That's the central question of this. Is like, on whom are you depending and whom are you putting your trust? He says, look, I know you're depending on Egypt, that splintered reed of a staff. He says, that's what Egypt's like. It's like a stick. It's like a cane. It's like a staff. You lean on it, and then it snaps. And when it snaps off, it leaves splinters, and they run through your hand. He's saying, don't trust in Egypt. And he says, but if you say, no, we're not trusting Egypt. We're depending on the Lord our God. And then the commander of the king's army kind of mocks him. He says, well, isn't that Lord the one that Hezekiah took down all the high places? You see, the commander of the Lord's, the commander of Sennacherib's army misunderstands. He thinks that when Hezekiah tore down the high places, that it was a sign of defeat for God. But it wasn't. But the commander goes on. And then he says, come now, make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria. This is a great part in verse 8. I will give you 2,000 horses if you can put riders on them. So this is where essentially the commander of Sennacherib's army starts trash talking with the king of people of Israel. He says, look, I know you guys are kind of weak, so tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 2,000 chariots. In other words, I'll spot you 50 points, and we'll see how this goes. He says, I'm going to give you all the equipment you need. Again, go back to our analogy. It's almost like the United States is getting ready to invade the Dominican Republic, and they says, here are 300 tanks. They're all yours, if you know how to drive them and run them. And it's still not going to make a difference. And so this commander says, here, we'll give you 2,000 horses. You're not going to be able to do anything with them. He says, how then can you repulse one officer of the least of my master's official, even though you are depending on Egypt for chariots and horsemen? And so he continues, furthermore, have I come to attack and destroy this land without the Lord? The Lord himself told me to march against the country and destroy it. So now he's trying something else. It's almost as if this commander of Sennacherib's army is kind of throwing anything against the wall. Like, don't trust in Egypt. Well, your God isn't powerful, but in fact, your God sent me to save you. He's just, whatever he can do to try and convince the people that they're defeated. And then there's this whole thing where these three men who are standing, there's these three representatives of Hezekiah come before him, and they're talking to this commander, and they say, hey, dude, could you not speak in the native language? Notice that in verse 12 or 11, he says, please speak to your servants in Aramaic, since we understand it. Don't speak to us in Hebrew in the hearing of the people on the wall. In other words, use Aramaic. That was kind of the trade language. That was the language that many people knew, but usually only the educated. Why doesn't he want that? Because he doesn't want all the people inside the walls to hear what's going on. He doesn't want him to hear broadcast and to begin to doubt them. He's thinking of all those people inside the walls. And the commander says, I'm here to tell all of you. I'm here to let all of you know how bad it is. That all of you will eat your filth and drink your own urine. He says, this is going to get really bad for you. He says, but hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Do not let Hezekiah deceive you. He cannot deliver you. Do not let Hezekiah persuade you to trust in the Lord when he says, do not listen to him. He's reminding him again and again, don't listen to Hezekiah. Don't trust in the Lord. And then he says this in verse 16. This is what the king of Assyria says. Make peace with me and come out to me. Then each of you will eat fruit from your own vine and fig tree and drink water from your own cistern until I come and take you to a land like your own, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards. So we have the commander of Sennacherib's army saying, look, we're not coming here to destroy you. We're coming here to give you the best of things. If you let us take your city, you're going to have free Wi-Fi. You're going to have new houses. You're going to have unlimited. You're going to have a buffet any day you want. And when we come to take you away, when we come and haul you off to Assyria, it's going to be really nice. You're going to have grain and new wine, bread and vineyards. Does anyone believe that for a minute? But here's this king, and if you're sitting inside the city, and you're hearing these words, and you know that the other tribes in the north have already been taken off into captivity. If you're sitting inside the city and you're looking around at a bunch of old men and young boys, if you're sitting around and realizing you don't have any chariots, you don't have much an army, if you're sitting in the city and you're looking out and you see the armies of Assyria with hundreds of chariots, with shining swords and spears and shields, if you see the Assyrian army that has crushed nation after nation, city after city, and they're promising you when they haul you off into captivity that there's going to be vineyards and wine, you might start to believe them. You might start to wonder, well, here's my option. I can sit inside here, inside the city, and we can fight against Assyria, and they're going to lay siege to the city, and we'll be eating scraps in whatever we can find. Or they can take us off into captivity. We'll have all the food we can eat. Let's see. Eat my own filth and urine. Vineyards. Bread, wine. Which one sounds better to you? And so they're wondering. And it seems like at this moment, the commander of the army has them. Because he's got it in their heads that they only have one of two choices. They can trust in this Assyrian king, and they can have these cisterns, and they can have fine wine and vineyards and grapes, or they can trust in Hezekiah, in which case they will be besieged and be suffering and be in ruin. So those are the two choices laid before them. But then the commander of the army makes a mistake. And he goes on and he says, do not let Hezekiah mislead you when he says, the Lord will deliver you. And he says, have the gods of all these other nations delivered them? Because that's how the people of that time understood it. They understood that when there were battles going on, whichever side won, it was because their god defeated the other god. And so this commander says, look at all these other nations that Assyria has swept through, all these city-states. And every one that has been defeated, all their gods have been beaten. What makes you think your God is any different? What makes you think your God will do anything different? And then these three men, Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah, they don't know what to do. And it says, verse 22, they tear their clothes and they go to Hezekiah and tell him what has been done. So now they're standing in this place, and Hezekiah is wondering what to do. He's wondering what to do. And ultimately, you read through chapters 37 and 38, he goes to Isaiah, and Isaiah says, trust in the Lord. I have a message from the Lord that he will deliver you. And so Hezekiah says, okay, I see this army surrounding me. I see all these things before me, and it doesn't make any sense. I see those chariots. I see the soldiers. I've heard the stories. But you're saying, God, trust in you, so I will. God sends an angel, kills a number of the Assyrian soldiers, and the Assyrians withdraw. Even though they had Hezekiah cooped up, even though there was really no chance of winning, the Assyrians weren't going to lose this battle. But Hezekiah didn't see the army standing before him. What he saw was God, and he put his trust in God. He put his trust in the Lord instead of the armies of Assyria, instead of even in his own armies, and God delivered him. And so we say, well, that's a nice story, but that was a long time ago. And what does it have to do with us? We look out our windows. I don't see any Assyrian armies out there. But in a sense, each one of us does face those kind of battles. That we sit in our chairs, that we sit in our desks at work, that we sit in school, that we get out of bed in the morning, that we sit at our kitchen table, that we go to the store. And what we are is oftentimes surrounded by an army. And what we hear are voices that say, trust in me, not in God. So I want us to think about some of those armies that are out there, some of those things that we're tempted to trust in instead of trusting in God. What are some of those things that we are? So one is knowledge and technology. But sometimes we're tempted, when we face these things, when we're surrounded, we're tempted to face trust in technology. So a number of you, I know, have things inside of you that were not originally there. You have artificial knees, artificial hips, pacemakers, plates, and you have all sorts of amazing medical technology, right? All sorts of things that have enabled you to do things that you never thought you would be able to do. Things that have maybe enabled you to live longer than you thought you would be able to live. And those are amazing and wonderful things. But sometimes, could it be that we put too much trust in those things? Sometimes could it be that we're told that this technology will deliver you? I like to read about science and what's going on. And there are some amazing things going on in the medical field, amazing advances in technology. But each time an advancement is made, the temptation is to say, look at what we can do. We can make your life so much better. And they also say, they've gotten to the point where some are saying they think through their technology that people will not be able to just live for 100 or 200 or 300 years. But some technologies promoting the idea that they will be able to create technologies that will enable you to live forever. How? By transferring your mind into a computer, by freezing your body, by doing all kinds of things. And there's these promises to say, you know what? There's all these diseases. There's all this horrible stuff out here. But if you simply put your trust in medicine, if you put your trust in technology, we can promise you life. We can promise you flourishing. We can promise you health. In fact, we can maybe even promise you life forever. It's the commander of the Assyrian army saying, you can put your trust in this stuff. But we realize that none of those things really enable us to live forever. And even when we get an artificial hip, an artificial knee, an artificial heart, then eventually it all fails, doesn't it? Each and every one of those things fails. And so the call is to say, do we believe, do we trust in those, or do we trust in God who can do it? We look at knowledge, you know, and we think of the world around us. And there's this belief sometimes that if we could just get the nations of the world to sit down and talk, everything would work out. It's one of the promises of technology today. We have these amazing little devices that many of us carry around in our pockets. Or we have them sitting on our desks. And we're able to talk to people on the other side of the world. Some of you communicate with grandchildren or children or nieces and nephews or maybe your grandparents, and you can talk to them on the other side of the country, and you can have these face-to-face conversations. And nations can do this. Nations can gather, and leaders of the world can meet together, and they can talk together. They can fly halfway around the world in a matter of a few hours and come, and they can have conversations. And there's a belief sometimes that if we could all just sit down and talk together, if we could just understand each other, then the world's problems would be solved. If we could all just meet at Camp David and have some coffee and donuts. If we could all just gather together, if we could just get the countries together and everybody could sit down and just understand each other, the world's problems would be solved. And so what is it? It's a call to trust in the technology, in the wisdom. Or maybe it's a call to trust in the politics. Maybe the army that's surrounding us, that's calling us to trust in them and instead of in God, is politics. Yes, I'm talking about politics in church. About politics. Because you may not know, we have an election coming up in a year from now. And in that election, I will guarantee you that both parties will make you promises. They will make you promises that will tell you how much better life will be for you and for everyone else if you elect them. And they will also tell you how horrible life will be if you elect the other individual. If you elect me, you will have, fill in the blank, right? But if you elect that guy or that girl, that woman over there, oh, it's going to be so horrible. It's going to be the end of days. Cats and dogs living together. It's going to be terrible. And so what is the promise of politics? The promise that if we just get the right person in power, and we are tempted to believe that sometimes too. We're tempted to think, oh, our nation is going the wrong direction. These things are horrible. And if we get this person elected, everything's going to be okay. It's the commander of the Assyrian army standing there and saying, look, what are you going to do? I know what you can do. You can elect this person. And if he or she is sitting in the White House, then everything's going to be okay. You're going to have vineyards and fresh bread, a chicken in every pot, all these things that are going to be happening if you elect the right person. And so it's a call to trust in them. And the question we have to ask ourselves, is that where we put our trust? Will the right person elected really change things? I mean, we make jokes about our inability to trust politicians. We laugh and we say, well, nobody trusts any politicians. But the truth is we do. Maybe we don't trust when their lips are moving. We don't trust the words they're saying. But do we go to the ballot box and believe somehow that, oh, if I just elect, if I don't vote for this person, the nation's going to fall apart. Or if we don't pass this law, things are going to crumble. And every time I think of that, I remind myself of the stories of the Old Testament. Because there were these people of God called Israel. And God wrote the laws for them with his finger on tablets of stone and said, here's how to run a nation. They said, we want a king. And he said, here's the king I have chosen for you. And the question is, how did that work out for them? Not very well. And we sometimes believe the same thing, that if we just get the right person in power, if we just pass the right laws, that everything will be okay. Now, I am not saying, listen carefully, I'm not saying that it doesn't matter who we vote for. I'm not saying that the laws don't matter that we pass. I'm not saying that we should be uninvolved in the political process. That's a decision that you have to make. But that's not what I'm not saying those things don't matter. What I'm saying is, do we put our confidence and trust in those things, the confidence and trust that really belongs to God alone? Because my guess is, Any of you who've lived through more than one election and voted for a politician, have any of you ever had a politician who's let you down? Has any of you ever had someone you voted for and were confident that things were going to be so much better because they're in office? And then you realize that some of the promises they made weren't true. Or that they wanted to keep those promises, but they couldn't because they had to work with the Senate and with the Congress. And they had to work with the realities of how things go in the world. And so, what God is calling us to say, be careful, we're not putting our ultimate confidence and our ultimate trust in those, but our confidence again only in God. Or what about possessions? Do we put our trust and our confidence in possessions that if I just keep enough money put away, if I invest in the right places, if I save carefully, then I'll be able to retire and do what I want. And then when I have those things, I have this enjoyable, relaxing, energizing life of retirement. And most of us know people who thought that very thing. And then a stock market collapsed. Or the day came when they retired, and 3 days later you were attending their funeral. Or they found, even though they had moved to that house they always dreamed of, even though they had all those things, that really, they weren't as happy as they thought they would be. Why? Because they were putting their trust, their confidence in something other than in God. We do it in our spiritual lives too. We begin to think, we look at ourselves sometimes and we say, oh, I'm fighting these battles, I've got this problem going on in my life. I've got these issues that I'm battling. I'm battling against greed. I'm battling against lust. I'm battling against anger. And we begin and we engage in the battle ourselves instead of trusting in God to make the change in us. And so the story of Hezekiah is a story for us. Because the armies surrounding us are not Assyrian armies with shields and swords and spears and chariots. But there is an army surrounding us of things that are calling out. There is a commander of the army of Sennacherib standing, and he takes many different forms. He takes the form of advertising. He takes the form of politicians. He takes the form of the culture around us. A voice that calls out, don't trust in God. God can't really do this. But put your trust in technology. Put your trust in medicine. Put your trust in money. Put your trust in politics. Put your trust in those things because those are the things. And the message that Isaiah wants us to hear is saying, there is only one who is trustworthy. There is only one whose promises never fail. There is only one whom we can ultimately trust. Now, does trusting in God mean that everything always turns out happy? That everything always turns out, it's like, oh, I trusted in God, and look. No. I got my job back. I got the new truck. Our team won the football game, and my wife is pregnant, and everything's all good again. Look, I trusted in God. It's great. Jesus was the ultimate picture of trust in God. Where did it get him? Cross. Betrayal. So trusting in God doesn't always lead us down the happy life. But the thing about trusting in God is God will never let us down ultimately. That God will never fail. Because He is the one alone who is trustworthy. And so as you look around and you have battles, we all have battles. We all have things calling to us. All of us are facing battles and challenges and trials. And the question is, how will we fight our battles? Where will we put our trust? When we look at the armies surrounding us, will we trust in technology and medicine, power and money and all those other things we look, or will we put our trust in God? When it comes, you have to ask yourself, how will you fight your battle? And what Isaiah is calling us to do is to say, this is how I fight my battle. This is how I fight my battle. By trusting in God, because He alone is trustworthy. So this week, when you're at home, when you're at work, when you're out doing, and you look up, you look around at your life, and you feel like you're surrounded by the enemies, when you feel like the waves are about to crush over you, when you feel like doom is certain, when things are about to crush in upon you, trust in God. Say, this is how I fight my battle. This is how I fight my battle, by trusting in God. Because He alone is the one who is trustworthy. In God we trust. Because He is the one who is trustworthy. So let us put our trust in God, the one alone who can save. Let's pray. God, we thank You for Your trustworthiness. That You are the one in whom we can put our confidence. God, when we stumble, when we fall, when we face the battles, when we face the night, help us to remember that You alone are the one in whom we can trust. God, help us to remember that You care for us deeply, that You love us, and that You have plans for us, that You are the one of us who knows the best for us. So God, may we put our trust in You and in You alone. In Jesus' name.